Thanks for joining us on the NRT Now podcast, part of the largest Christian music site online, newreleasetoday.com. Sit back and relax as we chat with your favorite artists, introduce you to new artists, and more. Now here's your host, Jake.
Welcome to episode 43. Just want to say a quick thanks for taking the time to spend with us here. We really are truly glad that you're here and just appreciate that you do take the time out to listen to our podcast here. And I know all the artists that are the guests on the podcast here, very much appreciated as well. Speaking of that, our guest for this episode is Dan Rivera with SEU Worship. SEU is a school down in Lakeland, Florida. And I scheduled this episode for this week because this is about the time when schools are starting to get ramped up and gearing up, ready to go, at least down here in Texas. Usually starts around mid-August, but it seems like all eyes are on education right now, on the schools, just with everything going on with this pandemic. And first and foremost, I just want to say for everybody that's around the education side of life, whether that be faculty, administrators, teachers, even parents, we just want to say that we're praying for you guys. This season is super, super tough. I mean, it's just crazy all the decisions that have to happen right now. I've had a lot of friends that are trying to make the decision, do we send our kids back to school? Do we keep them home? There's a lot of just tough decisions that are all around education right now. And we just want to say that we're praying for each and every one of these decisions. In this episode, we'll hear a bit from Dan, just how they're addressing these challenges, how they did it in the spring, and kind of what they're leading into going into the fall here. There's still a lot of uncertainties for timing and stuff, but you know, we at least get to hear what their plans are. And I was really encouraged with this conversation too, because I just learned a lot about what's going on with the next generation that's coming in to the colleges, and especially from a faith-based school perspective. And I personally learned a lot, and I'm really excited for you to be able to hear from Dan as to what's going on down in Lakeland there. So without further ado, here's Dan Rivera with SEU Worship. So we are hanging out with Dan with SEU Worship. Hey, thanks for taking the time for us here, man.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be here.
So, and we were just talking a minute ago, there's a couple of the other members that were supposed to join, but they're stuck in a rainstorm, which you guys are in Lakeland, Florida.
Yeah.
And right about now, like, a rainstorm is not really uncommon for you guys.
No, it's definitely the rainy season. We basically live in the swamp, so it's it gets pretty gnarly. And if you didn't have the right umbrella or whatever that day, honestly, the rain is so bad that an umbrella is not going to help you. I don't know if you've seen, like, imagine tropical storm hurricane vibe. It's like that without the wind force. It's just insane if you get stuck in it.
Last year, we actually got to experience this. We spent about 2 weeks in Florida in the Orlando area. One week was for a conference, and then we're gearing up for the Jesus Freak cruise that was porting out of Cape Canaveral or Port Canaveral. Yeah. And because the two were so close, we just decided to say, screw it, we're taking 2 weeks. And so the conference was the Monday through Friday, the beginning week. We stayed over the weekend and then, you know, headed out on the cruise. And so funny enough, one of the things that we did was we actually headed down to Lakeland. So we've actually been to your hometown. I had no idea last year that we're that close to SEU, or that actually
no way
SEU even existed, if I'm honest. So as I was doing the research a little bit in prep for this interview, I'm like, what the heck does SEU stand for? Like, it's got to stand for something. And you know, it was the university, Southeast University in Lakeland, Florida. And we're literally 10 minutes away from campus last year.
What brought you guys to Lakeland when you came through?
So a friend of ours and an NRT alumni owns a vinyl store, Jesse Carl Vinyl. And
oh, yeah. Down there.
And so we went down to see her. It didn't happen because she was out sick that day, of course. And I think we missed her by like 15 minutes is all when she went home.
Wow.
But we just wanted to get out and around from Orlando. We didn't want to go to Disneyland. We'd already been to Universal, just all these expensive places we just weren't in for. Yeah. So we just decided to go down there, and we're baseball fans and we love going to different stadiums. So we looked at a baseball map of where there's teams, and then there's the Lakeland Flying Tigers.
Yep.
So we actually tried to go to a Flying Tigers game, but that shockingly got rained out after three innings. I mean, yeah. Given what we were talking about just a second ago, I know it's very surprising, but it got rained out.
So you guys would have been here during spring training then for those guys?
It was June.
Oh, okay. So they're in their summer minor league season?
Yep.
Yeah.
Which was super funny. That game, there was two major league pitchers on rehab assignments from both sides.
Oh, wow.
I think they're playing a Mets team. The Mets Class A team, if I remember correctly. But there were both major league starting pitchers that were on rehab assignments. Just both happened to be there that day. It was
gnarly.
That doesn't happen very often in the minor leagues.
Sure. Yeah,
the players do go through rehab assignments, but to have two major league starting pitchers, especially that far down the totem pole there, is just a weird situation.
Yeah, no doubt. Lakeland's a pretty unusual place. As you kind of described, it's off the beaten path a little bit. Like if you're coming to Central Florida, you're coming for Disney World, most likely. You might be coming to Tampa, and we are in between both those cities. But it's got like a funny history. So you have the minor league team. And then if you're an architecture buff, Frank Lloyd Wright, one of the biggest collections of his work is in Lakeland,
wow.
Florida. Because he designed a college that's around this beautiful lake, just down the street from Southeastern, actually, called Florida Southern. So there's those two things. And then Publix, I guess, if you know about Publix grocery stores, where they're from Lakeland. It's also got like a bit of a revival history. So if you've ever heard of like the Lakeland Revival or a movement from a church called Carpenter's Home, you speak with different generations and they remember Lakeland being this like church revival hub. So it's always very funny talking to people, and you'd be like, who's been to Lakeland? And we just meet people all the time who have stumbled into good old Polk County, Lakeland, Florida, man.
Yep. And between going to visit the NRT alum and the baseball team, I mean, it was just a great time. We went downtown. I can't even remember where we ate that day. And it was a nice little restaurant downtown. It's a gorgeous kind of old Americana, just downtown scenario with a park in the middle. And there's a lake just not far off that we walked around in a flower garden that was just incredible.
Yeah, it's like a, oh, yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like a Lifetime movie, basically. It has that kind of old Americana feel to it, for sure. And it's been cool. The trend at the moment has been a lot of people who grew up in Lakeland and then kind of went on to do other things are coming back and starting, you know, local businesses, a lot of arts and music stuff happening. So that's really inspiring. Anything from like, you know, more craft coffee, bakeries, restaurants, that kind of thing. And then also more like music venues, all that stuff. So it's starting to feel like its own little special cultural hub in the state.
When we visited Lakeland, we just found out that we're pregnant, and June, it was hot as all get out. And so we were trying to like hop between places so my wife didn't get overheated, finding water everywhere we can. But it was just a gorgeous, gorgeous town and just a fun place to visit, you know, while we're waiting out the weekend to get on the cruise.
Yeah. How was the cruise? It sounds so cool.
Oh, man. So judging by you graduating in 2013 from SEU, so you're SEU alumni as well. Now back to SEU is what I understand.
Yeah.
So I read your profile on the website. That's about what I know.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing you're, what would that put you, about 27, 28-ish?
I'm 29, yeah.
Yeah, that was close.
Yeah.
So there's this group back in the day called DC Talk.
Yeah. Know. Oh, I know. I know all about them.
Oh, my gosh. You would not believe some of the younger people that you mentioned DC Talk to, and they're like, who? Like, all right, let's give you the history about Christian music from about 1995 on.
Jake, listen. So my context is I'm the worship pastor for a college campus, right? So every year I get a new intake of 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds. And nothing makes me feel more dated than talking about music. And I don't even consider myself that old. Yeah. Like, I still think of myself as a young guy. So I'm like, but yeah, anything from DC Talk, even like, you know, big bands like Coldplay, you know, yeah, their understanding of that band's importance and what they mean is minimal. You know, it's funny, like basically if they've been in high school the last couple years, they missed a bunch of stuff that was foundational for me. So the Christian music bands, all the CCM bands, you know, that were foundational for me, Newsboys, DC Talk, all that stuff growing up, just listening to, like, my first cassette I ever owned was a DC Talk Jesus Freak cassette.
Nice.
Right. Like, so there's that, but then there's also like the indie alt punk rock movements of the aughts and late aughts that were basically my college soundtrack. They just don't, they don't know any of those bands. Like, they don't know who Arcade Fire is. Yeah. Like, they're kind of a big deal.
Even the pop punk. I mean, it's like new.
Oh, yeah.
Some people stumble upon that and it's like, what's this? Like, you don't know who Green Day is or.
It's real.
Probably isn't the right direction we should go for a Christian podcast, but when we're talking generation, what I grew up with, you know, my early college years and all that. I mean,
well, it just speaks to like the cultural vernacular is so different. It's one of the fun things about what we get to do here, because we're always dealing with younger creatives, younger artists, younger students. So their touch points and their cultural references are always just, they're just different. So we're always starting in different places with them. But yeah, it's funny you mentioned DC Talk, because I'm like, I know who that is. Yeah. I know the conversation, how that goes with other Gen Zers.
Yeah. So we'll go back to the college and the cultural touch points here in a second. But to get back to your question.
You know, yeah.
The cruise was amazing. So 13-year-old me was in hog heaven. I went in 17 as well. So we did the 17 one when they first got back together. And that one was kind of testing the waters. And then the one last year, yeah, after they kind of broke that ice, it felt natural. The guys felt natural together. It was a much more comfortable show, if that makes it sense.
Yeah.
But it was just, you know, a lot of fun. We took our older one, she's 9 now, and we took her along with, so she saw some stuff in the Bahamas and just kind of cultural for her as well. And just all the music on the ship to go on a cruise and live the cruise life for 5 days, but also have a bunch of people that are there for the same reason and are kind of the same mindset is just incredible.
That is cool.
And then, like I said, the 13-year-old me was just in hog heaven.
Yeah, just so excited. That's great.
Oh, man.
Yeah, my first concert was DC Talk, actually. There's this other band that opened for him, and it was like, I don't know if you remember the song, but it was like, the devil and the devil is the, you know,
W's.
About?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the W's.
We're talking about an era that just died out with ska.
It's just gone.
It was there for a minute, and now it's just.
That's so real. I grew up in South Florida. It was like ska band central. If you know a lot of those like ska bands, they were all from that area, where a lot of them were from there. There's a ska festival my brother would try and take me to every year, my older brother. Yeah. That feels like it didn't age well. Like it's just, it's kind of gone.
Yeah, you had the Supertones and the W's were the big ones at the time. And yeah, that lasted, I think W's had 2 albums. And after that, it just kind of disappeared from the map.
Yeah.
So that's a good throwback that you need to play for some of your incoming students.
Or maybe not. I don't know. I should revisit them. I remember the show was really good.
Dude, the W's were awesome. That was definitely one of my go-tos in the CD pack back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, both albums, as long as that lasted.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the incoming students that you see on a day-to-day basis. You know, your university, you know, you're producing the live albums, but the main focus is a university and kind of the school of worship. We're in Dallas Baptist University territory here, DBU territory.
Okay.
A couple of my friends are attending there right now. So I have a little bit of a context about just a university life with that Christian theme. And they do the chapels and have some of those worship ministries as well. So I kind of got a vague concept of it, but I'm interested in, you know, kind of hearing what you guys do, marrying that university with that faith-based as well.
Yeah, so SE started as a Bible college, and it was to train Assemblies of God, Pentecostal ministers and evangelists and missionaries. And, you know, that history, I think, is like 1933 it started. Initially in Alabama, makes its way down to Lakeland eventually, relocates there. It's like in the 90s, it transitions to, begins this transition from a Bible college to a college and then a university. So we're talking like just in the last 20, 30 years, it's really made a jump to being more of a liberal arts school with a bunch of different programs. You know, at the time when I was a student, there was like a school of business and a pre-med track, but it was like just minimal, and an education track, stuff like that. There's a few other options besides like ministry or pastoral studies if you wanted to do that. But in the last recent years, I'd say like the last 10 years, it's really grown, and it's both student-based, but then also kind of programs we have here. But if you talk to anyone who's been at Southeastern since the early days, so my grandpa is actually a minister who graduated from Southeastern when it was a Bible college in the 60s.
Oh, wow.
And he'll tell you, his generation will talk about these worship services and the chapel worship services, how they would seek God. And sometimes they would do 2 or 3 week revivals where the chapel was full every day of people praying and worshiping and preaching. And then you talk to like other generations, you know, my pastor, his name is Phil. He's actually David's father. If you know David Cook, who's one of our core artists, part of our ministry, one of our worship pastors. You know, he's a later generation in the Bible college, but he just says the same thing. And then you talk to people who were here with our president in the 90s, early 2000s, and you hear about the worship culture there. It's always seemed like a unique part of Southeastern's history was a spirit of worship and prayer. Almost like revival, honestly. Just this hunger and desperation for the things of God to see the supernatural happen in our chapel services. Around the year like 2010, 2011, we really, as a leadership team, this is when I was a student, I saw an emphasis shift with our chapels where we wanted to make it feel like it was more reminiscent of a church service that you would experience instead of a traditional school chapel. So when you have a traditional school chapel, like at any university, a lot of the feedback I hear from worship pastors or students as we meet them that are at those kind of places is it could be a little sleepy, the environment. It could be a little bit like a lecture coming from the pulpit. And then you can also get fervent students that are involved, but like the quality and the level of worship is just limited to some people's experience. So Southeastern really dedicated to itself to making sure the worship services were vibrant, full of life, and still had that signature kind of revival spirit to them. And that's what I got to experience. And the overflow of that is what we kind of, we always had this traveling worship choir and had a bunch of different names, the Voices of Southeastern, Southeastern Choir, Southeastern Singers eventually. And then we changed it to SEU Worship. So it would kind of cover all of the different worship leaders, all the different students who were participating in the services. And then we started to write these songs, and then we started doing albums. So that's kind of the spiritual climate of what it's like. So you could come to Southeastern and study, you know, nursing. We have a really strong nursing program and degree here, and come to chapel a couple times a week. And as you participate in chapel, hear good teaching of the word, be impacted by the worship, encounter the presence and the spirit of God, see the supernatural happen. And then we also have discipleship groups and other things like that too, that play a large role in our spiritual development. So ultimately, our SCU worship is part of our spiritual development department on campus. So unlike other places, other schools, we're not a separate team that travels. We're actually just all the people who lead worship in chapels. And that's who we are.
It's awesome. So a lot of what we hear in the church and kind of as a country is around that 18 to 22 year old, you know, incoming college students. That's a really hot spot for leaving the church, you know, for kind of losing your faith. I'm not sure hot spot is the right way I want to say that, but
sure,
probably maybe problem spot is probably a better phrase for that. But
yeah,
you know, that's something really tough as you move out into independence, especially with some of the secular universities and all that. What do you guys kind of see as students come in and are wrestling with that faith now that they're not at home anymore? They're kind of exploring the world and their own opinions and all that. What do you see, you know, as a school and as a worship team as the younger generation walks through that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I feel my mind wanting to go in like four different directions. I think
mine did too, asking the question. So,
but I think this generation is different and unique. You know, I call myself a millennial and we lead Gen Z at the moment on campus. And there's definitely just differences. The biggest thing that I've noticed in how we work and lead with this kind of batch of students and this generation is, as a millennial, the sociologists would say that millennials are consumer based, right? Whereas Gen Zs are creators. They're going to make stuff while we millennials consume stuff. And that would be true of the kind of social media platforms, by and large, millennials will use versus Gen Z, you know, like Snapchat or Instagram story or something like that. TikTok resonates a lot more of participating, making something, you know, contributing to the space. Whereas like Facebook or Twitter or the early days of Instagram is all about just kind of chewing on the feed, just scroll all day. When we bring that to like our spirituality, we've got a group of students that are just hungry and eager to preach and teach and lead worship and write songs and contribute. And one of the challenges is you have a lot of spaces that are afraid to give students the voice and the platform and the opportunity to do that. So we try and really make mistakes early when it comes to giving those students opportunities, if that makes sense. Like if someone's going to mess up and kind of fail or look funny on stage, we're going to give them that opportunity early to kind of go for it and try it, which is why, you know, on our records, we've always had students singing songs. And as God continues to grow the sound and the scope of what we're doing, it's like we still want to be taking those kind of risks. And I think that helps Gen Zs feel like, oh, I can contribute here. My voice can be heard here. There's space for me. The challenge to that, and I've always saw that as actually like a huge plus, a huge benefit to the Gen Z students. The challenge that comes with that is every now and then you get a sense of like, oh, if there's not room for me here, or I feel like having to serve in production for a year before I can be on the platform or whatever, if that feels like too much work, and this applies for any ministry, any context. If those steps feel like too much work, I'm actually just going to leave and either start my own thing, like just start my own little like Instagram TV series or whatever, or I'm going to go find another church or another thing that will make room for me. And the thing I find us having to reteach over and over with Gen Z is the importance of faithfulness. So that's one thing I would say we notice is a real difference in how we work with our students. A second thing I would say is just that people are so hungry for like an actual divine supernatural encounter with God. Hmm. So we really try and bring it back to the basics with them all the time. So we pray for baptisms of the Holy Spirit. Like we pray for, I don't know, like we're kind of old school that way. Like we just kind of go for it. And we've seen healings happen in chapel and we've seen salvations even, because even though we are a Christian school, there's a lot of students who sign a waiver saying that they're a Christian, but in reality don't have a faith or a confessional statement they can make about what they believe. And so they come to know God and get baptized in our chapels.
Oh, wow.
And then even there's students who don't come to Southeastern, but that just attend our chapels because they're open to everybody. And we've had students from other universities come and continue to come and give their lives to Christ, you know, and then get baptized. But I think a lot of that hinges on offering people just a supernatural experience, like actually inviting people into the presence of God and letting that do its thing. So we believe in excellence and we produce our services to a high level of excellence. Simultaneously, we're open to the things of God and believe that He's going to move, He's going to heal, He's going to speak and practice spiritual gifts in our midst.
And so let's kind of go back to what we were talking about a little bit ago about the musical styles. It's a completely different generation. Oh, how old is she? She's maybe mid-20s or something like that. And she had never heard of DC Talk before. And it's like, oh my gosh, what's going on with this young generation? But what are you seeing musically that's changed over the years as far as students incoming into the worship program?
Yeah, it's funny. The DC Talk thing's interesting because there's so many new bands and new things we hear that me and some of the other worship pastors recognize is like they're trying to revisit like a pop punk thing from the 2000s and add a trap beat to it. That's what they're doing right now. So they're mixing this old thing, but for like Gen Z students, they're like, this is just a new thing. This is sick. And it's been kind of cool in this phase of my life, having a little bit of like the music experience I do, to bring them on the journey a little bit and be like, here's where they're kind of bringing those sounds from.
From our generation, we came in, worship was the early days of Hillsong, Darlene Check, Shout to the Lord, that kind of era of worship. You know, and then like I said, the DC Talks, the Newsboys, Jeremy Camp was starting to come out and everything. So that's kind of what we, you know, my age kind of brought into worship, the worship scene. So just, I'm interested to see what that is, you know, nowadays, what's coming into the worship program.
Do you remember the first time you held a vinyl? I don't know if you would remember that.
Yeah, I grew up in the CD era, like tape CD era. Yeah. So it was kind of rare. So I'm not sure 100% when that happened for me.
Me too. I grew up in CD tape era. And I remember one of the earliest times I actually got to pick up a vinyl at like an old school store and see the art was like this big and pull the sleeve out. And it was like a whole thing of discovery. I've watched our students do that with CDs.
Oh my gosh.
Like,
oh, that's terrible.
Like
that makes me feel so old.
And the reality is that our generation of students at the moment, and really just people in general, it's not just a generational thing, it's everybody, doesn't listen to music the same way that we all kind of came up listening to music. So that's got huge implications. You know, most students here are more likely to find a playlist than an album. It's not unusual for students or people that we kind of, our students to get really excited about an artist and get really excited about a record. But if some of the worship pastors and artists were here, we could get into like debates about our favorite United record or our favorite whatever album of all the bands that we love and reference and listen to. They don't necessarily digest music that way. They don't really think about it. It's kind of like moments and songs connected to playlists. And then when an artist breaks and they love them, they will get really into them. But even then, their ability to digest a record, it's just way faster than it would have been for me. Like if I'm into an album, it's like months of listening to an album, where they might have like a two-week spree with it and then put it on the shelf and find something else.
And what about stylistically? Is it kind of all over the map because of the playlist versus artist on album thing? Or are we seeing more of kind of like the modern worship being the mindset that comes in?
So what we do every time we go to write music, we lead with this thought called prophetic pop. And prophetic pop is basically our commitment to being full of the Spirit, taking risks, experimenting, but then also staying true to the music that influences us, like pop music that influences us, popular music that influences us. What is normal for us is for each songwriting retreat, we start a Spotify playlist of just what everyone's listening to. 9 out of 10 of those songs aren't worship songs. We worship our faces off. as I kind of shared earlier about our sort of revival background and culture on campus. But when we go to write, we really do try and reference the stuff that people are listening to. And part of prophetic pop is our commitment to making music for 16 to 26 year olds too, right? Because that's basically, as a ministry, that's the majority of who we lead worship for. It's not unusual to lead Sunday morning church services or to do events where there's more multi-generational audiences. But we know that God's uniquely called us to 16 to 26 year olds. So we want to write music from that well of what they like and what they're listening to. And our students always have a really good way of keeping us on that north and putting us towards that music. I'd like to think that I'm always listening to the same stuff they are. And sometimes I've discovered I'm not. But by and large, the more we hang out with the students and keep our staff pretty young, it naturally goes that way. So it's kind of tough. I will say there's definitely worship artists and bands that get brought up a lot and that really inspire us. You know, I know we're really inspired by what Hillsong does, what Maverick City's doing, Elevation. With those albums come up all the time, and that's just a few of them. And we listen to them, we study them, we sing those songs in our chapels. I'm kind of under the conviction, like, if God gave us the gift of songwriters and songwriting, I don't want to spoil the gift. Yep, you know, it's like, have you ever given someone, like, I'm sure we've all done this. You give someone a gift for Christmas or their birthday or something just to find out they returned it. And I don't want to be the child of God who got a gift and then returned it. I just want to use the gift of songwriting. And I say that to our community a lot, that we would continue to use the gift that God's given us. So we really try and stay committed to what's God speaking to us, what songs are inspiring us right now, how do we use those to work on our next project.
The next question that I have with that is the ever so fun one that we have nowadays is the remote learning, you know, now that everything's shut down and we all spread out. And we've talked a lot about this with different worship artists and, you know, in the church, but I'm interested to see, you know, the educational side of it as you guys are teaching the college students in worship. Now everybody dispersed, and how has that been for SEU and more in particular the worship department as well?
Yeah. At the moment we're planning on doing some kind of coming back into the fall, some kind of modified version of everybody coming back together where we shrink the classrooms, practice social distancing, all of that. So basically just means more worship experiences, but smaller, or they're more spread out, continuing to do the virtual thing. As far as we're experimenting with watch parties in the fall. So basically you can gather with less than six people, six or less people in a specific area and watch the live stream. And we want people to worship together there. So this would be like your dorm room roommates or your housemates or something like that, or people that you live in the same hall with. So you guys already share a space. So coming together to worship together wouldn't be odd or wouldn't be asking you to go outside your comfort zone. Those are some of the solutions we're coming up with. From a writing perspective, we're still planning on recording we're hustling to try and record another live album in the fall sometime.
Wow.
As soon as we can. It's hard to know what it'll look like. It might look like really intimate settings. Hopefully by the time we're ready to record, we're looking at November, December, it'd be a big gathering can happen again. Yeah. So I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. Everybody with a bandana.
Yeah. Yeah. Bandana worship.
Our whole worship face will be different.
Yeah.
Isn't that just such a thing as you're watching these live albums, just the different worship faces? I mean, I'm definitely the sit and soak it in kind of face.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, it's almost angry face when I'm listening to a particular piece or something like that. And then there's some people that are just like all in. And I mean, the worship faces are just all across the board.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You got your contemplative, you got your like crying, you got your I don't know what I'm doing here face. Yeah. My friend invited me. I don't want to be here face. You get the whole gamut.
Yeah, you know, then we'll have the masks. Personally, I'm hoping that we can be done with masks so we can get back to that experience that we can really truly worship together and in person. Like you said, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But as far as the instructional side, you know, as you're teaching, you know, I know there's some instrument pieces to it, you know, just the songwriting. How has the instruction been from the shutdowns for the last probably half of that spring semester?
We moved everything to online. If students like to, they could stay on campus under strict social distancing protocol. We had some students that felt like it was safer to be on campus than it was to go back home if they were from a hotspot or something like that. But then all the classes moved to remote. So you could sign in and then you would see your lecture virtually. And a lot of professors did it differently. I taught a course where we moved it to just weekly video calls. And then turning in the assignments online, that kind of a thing. So everyone did it a little bit differently. Depends on how it was formatted for you. But yeah, it's been a challenge, no doubt. And I think for all of us, we as an institution were positioned in a good place because we already have most of our learning portals have an online interface. So if you're in a class, you already have an online class basically. Gotcha. And where you turn in your work and you can do discussion boards. Not every professor utilizes them because they're going to do the on-class stuff. So it's kind of pushed all of us to utilizing that now, where we had to put everything through there. But it's allowed us to lecture. And in some ways, I actually like teaching in front of a computer more than teaching in front of people, because you can do things like have them interact in the chat in unique ways or ask questions in a more productive way, I think. So I actually kind of enjoyed it personally, but I'm also an introvert.
That helps. Yeah, an introvert on stage. See, that's one of those paradoxes that I've never really fully gotten my head around.
Oh, like the public introvert?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the introvert leading worship for thousands and thousands of people. Like, it's just one of those funny paradoxes that happen.
Yeah. So our core artists are made up of me, Kenzie, Sydney, and Dave. And me and Kenzie would both fall on the introverted side. You know, we're kind of like, we're fake extroverts, basically. So we love people and we love encouraging people and leading worship and connecting. You know, as an introvert, I love to connect. Like what you and I are doing right now is awesome. I could talk for hours like this. This is great. It's just that when there's loads of these people everywhere, it's not that I don't want to do it. It's just that the amount of energy it requires to me versus an extrovert is different. So it plays out in like when we're on the road after we're done and we've like talked to people at this merch booth and prayed for people and encouraged them. Then me and Ken's go to bed. Nice. And Dave and Sid are more likely to go grab dinner with the band or some students.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
What did you see the engagement as everything changed? We kind of removed that in person and that kind of group element from the instruction in the class. Did you see bigger engagement, less engagement, just different? What did you see from that side?
It's just person to person. Some people were able to lean in and engage better. Others were not. It kind of depends on their learning and personality style. I feel like that's true of even our online worship experiences too at the moment. You've got people who it's really great for them and they love it. And they're maybe more plugged in to, you know, our communities more than ever before. And you got others that are like, I can't wait to get back. I got to see people. This is not good for me. This is not good for my spirituality. I think it's just how God's wired each of us. So for me, it's made me mindful that I need to kind of offer both options for people, allow them to engage in both ways, and give credence and credibility to both of them simultaneously instead of rejecting one for the other. But it's just a person-to-person thing.
So we'll kind of wrap up here. Let's talk a little bit about Dan. Forget about that SEU stuff. We don't care about Kenzie and Dave. And actually, we do.
We love you, Kenzie and Dave.
Yes, yes, we do. I was stalking your Instagram the other day. Yesterday? Something like that. Yeah, anyway, yeah. I see a new little baby come from February. And so you're first time dad now.
Yeah.
With the appropriate dad stash.
That is true. I did do that.
I didn't connect it until just now, but I mean, for those of us at this age, like the dad stash was a real thing growing up at least for my dad. I remember the dad stash very clearly.
There's some photos where I have a ball cap and the mustache and Rome, my boy, in my hand. And I'm like, I look like my dad right there.
One of our, well, maybe it's just me, but the NRT thing is the dad jokes. I got to know if you're good on the dad jokes, if you've had the appropriate training in that range.
I feel like I'm unequipped for the dad jokes, man. You got to, I don't know. Maybe I feel like my staff would tell me otherwise, but I think I got a ways to go.
So I've got to figure this out. I heard about the service at our last team meeting was there's a website that you can sign up for that literally texts you a dad joke every day.
Amazing.
I'm not sure if that's a safe thing for me to do because I get enough eye rolls from my girls as it is, but I hear that's a great resource for dad jokes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have to look into this. I'm going to make a note. Oh, that's fantastic. No, I think I've been a dad in training, I feel like, since day one. I felt really comfortable for me to slide into my dad personality. The most dad-like thing I do is I love to like barbecue and grill food. So I feel like that puts me square in dad territory. And then the mustache, of course, is just adding more.
I still have yet to get the High Sox and the Nike Monarchs. Like, that's still in the works for me. But
oh, they might be on my feet right now.
Nice. I was okay until I bought the minivan this year. Like,
dude, listen, minivans are awesome.
I'm coming around.
We bought an SUV for Rome and our family in this season, and it's fun. But twice we've rented a minivan since we've had them for traveling to see family, that kind of thing. Back when traveling was a thing we would do.
Yeah, that was, I don't even remember when.
And the minivan is the move. That's all I got to say. We feel like we missed it. We should have got the minivan.
Like, I'm slowly coming to grips with it. Like, it was nice. We had to take a quick trip to visit Grandpa. And, I mean, it was nice. We didn't have to worry about overpacking. And, you know, with the little one, it takes almost your whole entire house to go anywhere with them.
Totally.
Yeah, it's may as well just rent a U-Haul and just go. But it was nice to not have to pack everything in, but I'm still kind of having a hard time. Like, I'm in full dad mode now. Like, there's no youthful, energetic parent. Like, it's full, completely dad mode now. That's where I feel like I shifted, like, to true dad mode.
Yeah. I could go on. I feel like we, the packing the car thing, the pride and the precision.
Yes.
That's a level to the dadness. That's very real. It's like, wait, no, don't pack the car. I got this.
See, I never really got the joy of that because my wife gets that packed in well before a trip. We're nice. Going out of town from when we're recording this in about a week or two. And it's driving her nuts already that she's not mostly packed. Like, that's how much of a prepper she is. So wow. A lot of the times either she'll pack while I'm at work or whatever. And I don't truly get the joy except for those last minute wedge it in. Like, I'm deprived of that bad accomplishment right there.
Well, there's still time. There's still time for you to get it and figure it out. But, you know, maybe it's the repack that allows her. The wedging it in is clutch. So
yes,
you're figuring it out.
That one last, can we really fit this in? Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't see the motion that's going on the Zoom call, but there's actions to this as well. Like, the one thing that doesn't translate to the podcast.
Right. Yeah. It's like, two-handed over the head maneuver is what it is. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Cool, man. Well, we definitely appreciate you hanging out with us for a while, man. It's been a blast.
This has been great.
Cool. And we're looking forward to the live album coming out. Well, at recording in fall. So if you release it or if you record it in fall, then we're looking at spring, right?
Yeah. You know, spring or summer. We just released a record in June. So that's out. It's called 1,000 Generations. It's on all platforms. So that's out there. If you guys want to hear what the worship sounds like, you can check it out there.
Cool. Well, we're looking forward to the new album coming out, hopefully spring or summer.
Can't wait.
Thanks for hanging out with us for this episode of the NRT Now podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And special thanks to Neon Feather for providing our theme music. Make sure to check out newreleasetoday.com and our socials for more great content. See you next episode.